Okay, we are studying the life of Moses, and just getting underway with that, Exodus chapter 2. And if you were here, or if you weren't here last week, we, in Exodus chapter 2, we see, of course, the birth of Moses, and then things, of course, take place very rapidly. With Moses, but when he was born, you recall, by faith, his parents hid him for 3 months, and then at the appropriate time when he got to the point they could no longer hide him, they made a basket and put him on the bank of the Nile River, and they had it all planned out, it seems, and they were hoping he would be discovered by someone, the appropriate person, that things would work out. Some believe even that they were hoping it would be Pharaoh's daughter. We have no way of knowing that, but it does seem like they scouted things out. They knew right where to put them, and because the providence of God was involved, it did all work out. And so Pharaoh's daughter found him, had compassion on him, and then even arranged for Jochebed to raise the nurse Moses for some years. We don't know how many, 3 or 4, maybe even 5 or 6. But then at the appropriate time, turned him over to Pharaoh's daughter. And then she took it from there, raised him in the ways of Egypt. And so he had the full education that you would think that the son of Pharaoh's daughter would have. And he excelled in all that he did. Stephen tells us in Acts chapter 7 that he was mighty in words and deed. And so things went very, very well for him. And then at verse 11, it says, one day when Moses had grown up, and so we know again from Acts chapter 7 that this was at the time that he was 40 years old. And so he decided to go out and visit his brethren. And if you weren't here last week, we tried to, one of the things to understand the life of Moses at this stage, you have to kind of bring together the various passages. There's 3 of them. The one before us, of course, in Exodus 2, but also Acts 7 and Hebrews chapter 11. And when you put that all together, you can kind of understand why some of the things happened that happened. And even here then, in Exodus chapter 2, we find that when he decided to go and visit his brethren, that wasn't just Moses getting up one morning and deciding out of curiosity, I'll just go and see how they're doing. He had that thing. He had some things in his mind that he wanted to accomplish. He had made some life decisions with regard to Pharaoh and the Egyptians and his brethren. So he goes out to visit them. He sees probably the taskmaster abusing one of his brothers, and he kills him. And then he goes back home, and he's thinking he got away with it and that nobody saw it, nobody would ever know. But then the next day he goes back because he's in the process of, we don't know exactly what was on his mind or how he was going to accomplish this in his own mind, but these were the first steps of him delivering his people. And we know that because of the inspired sermon that Stephen preached and what's said in that sermon. And it's hard for us to, what was he planning to do? We have no idea. But that's what he was planning to do. And in fact, again, according to that sermon, he thought his brethren should have understood what he was doing. And so he's in the process of that. He goes back the next day and he sees 2 of his brethren struggling. And the one who is the offender, when he tries to intervene, says, who do you think you are? Who made you a judge over us? And you kill me like you did the Egyptian. And you remember he killed him and put him in a shallow grave in the sand. And so once he heard that, he realized that it was out. And this is where you kind of, we don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. But what the Hebrew writer says particularly helps us a little bit here. It says that he knew immediately that Pharaoh would want to kill him. And I tried to explain to you last week that, I've even read a few commentaries that said that that's no surprise. Well, I disagree with that. It is surprising that Pharaoh would so quickly turn on Moses. And so I suggested to you last week, if you weren't here, I was suggesting that there was a reason for that. Again, this is a period of time Moses has made a life decision. And the Hebrews writer tells us what it is. He decided that he would not be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And in fact, the Hebrew writer said he refused to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And so I quoted, I didn't quote him, but I made reference to Josephus last week. Josephus tells us that neither Pharaoh or his daughter had any children. Now remember I said last week, you know, you have to take what Josephus says with a grain of salt. But I thought after the class last week, I should probably tell you, that doesn't mean that Josephus was a big liar and that he was always making stuff up. He didn't have that reputation at all. He's a worthy historian, but he does have the reputation, and, you know, we won't quabble over that. I guess maybe this would be considered lying, but he embellished all the time is what he did, and he did have that reputation. He would exaggerate his numbers and things, years and things like that, but so far as I know and everything I've read, he wouldn't just out of the blue just make things up. So when he says that these two didn't have any children, Pharaoh or his daughter, we can probably trust that. They probably didn't, which then would put Moses in line for the throne. And now, even if that wasn't the case, we can't be sure of that, but it's very, very probable. But even if it wasn't, he again had access to the best of Egypt. He was privileged no matter how you look at it. Even if he wasn't going to be the next Pharaoh, he was certainly privileged, and he had all the education and the science and astronomy and medicine, all of that, the best education Egypt had to offer, because he was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He lived in the lap of luxury, as you would expect. But he decided he didn't want any of that, that he chose rather to suffer with the people of God than to have those riches of Egypt. And now, that would be highly offensive to Pharaoh. Do you think his daughter would like that? How do you mothers, how do you feel about one of your children say, you know, by the way, I don't want to be your son? That doesn't go over too well, does it? So this had to be heartbreaking to Pharaoh's daughter. We don't know anything about her. We don't have any reason to think that she didn't do anything but the best for Moses. But he decided, he knew who he was, and he decided he wanted to be, all those years being really a part of the oppressors, he wanted to join lot with the oppressed. He instead of being in that lap of luxury, he decided he wanted to be with those who were being afflicted, because they were his people. And that's why he went out to visit them. That's why I said it wasn't him just waking up one morning with, you know what, I don't have much to do today. This is what I think. Well, let me spend a few hours with my brethren. He had a plan. But no matter how you look at it, he let his anger get the best of him. He had to get that anger issue under control. Because he murdered a man. Right? I mean, would anybody call that anything other than murder? I mean, I don't care what the Egyptian was doing to his brother. I mean, he shouldn't have been doing whatever he was doing, but you can't just decide to kill somebody. And that's what he did. And so that just put a stop to whatever it was he's planning. And now he has to flee for his life. He was right when thinking. Now he knows how all of this developed. He knows that he has decided and made it known he's not going to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He rejects whatever high position they had for him, whatever lot in life, the privilege that they were given to him. He basically decided not to do that. That would be viewed as an insult, as him not being thankful. And, you know, how blessed he is, they would think. They probably wouldn't use the word blessed, but you know, how fortunate he was. Because here he is, a Hebrew, and all the other Hebrew boys were being thrown into the river, and he ends up having this life of luxury. And he says, thanks, but no thanks. And so you can see, now when you understand all of that, you can see why, even though he was the adopted grandson of Pharaoh, and even though there's no reason for us to believe anything other than that Pharaoh's daughter loved him and treated him fine, why all of a sudden Pharaoh, just like that, just because, I say that every life is important. I'm not trying to devalue life at all. But to a Pharaoh, do you think any of Pharaoh's generals ever broke the law before, even killed someone before, with Pharaoh not making a big deal about it? There's hardly no doubt about that. Happens all the time when you have a situation like that with a king or someone who is in charge like that. Happens all the time. Sometimes they're very ruthless. And, you know, he's the law. He can just act like it didn't happen anytime he wants to. And he's the one in charge. And if he would do that to other people, why wouldn't he do that to his daughter's son? Well, maybe because he rejected the position that they were offering him and made it known he didn't want to be his daughter's son anymore. And so anyway, all that happened and he fled. So let's go to verse 16 then. We pick it up where he now had, verse 15 really, where it says, "And when Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian. And he sat down by a well." And so here he is. Now that, he's a long way away. He fled a long way. Midian would be, you know, that basically the Arabian desert area there. He had to flee a long way. It's not like Pharaoh would just look around the city just a little bit and say, "Well, we lost him." You know, probably sent out the guard and everything and trying to hunt him down. And he had to go all the way to Midian. But because none of this is planned, and he thought he got away with the killing of this Egyptian. And so, you know, he didn't plan anything out, and he's forced to, on the spot, now he's an outlaw, a fugitive of justice, and so he didn't, where's he going to go? He doesn't know anybody. Where is he going to live? The end of verse 15 simply says, he gets to Midian and he sat down by a well. Just pitiful. You feel bad for him, can't you? You just like, he went a long way. I just need to rest here. And he sat down at a well, nowhere to go. And of course, wherever you have a well in a desert like area, you're going to have a settlement. And so verse 16 then says, "Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and they drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock." Now watch this. It says, "The shepherds came and drove them away." Now notice that language. Not a bunch of shepherds came the shepherds came. And the language of these verses here seems to imply that this was an ongoing situation with these shepherds and this priest's daughter. And by the way, it was customary. You know, today we might think it should have been the men going out there and doing all that work. But it was customary for the women to go and to water the flocks and all of that. Where did Jacob meet Rachel? Right. So that was a customary thing to do, really. It wasn't unusual at all. And so these seven women would go out there and do their job and the chores that they had to do. And it appears again by the language that these shepherds would regularly come out and harass them. And because even in a minute when we read it and they go back home and explain it to a Reuel, they just refer to the shepherds, and he didn't have to ask any questions. And where did they come from? Who were they? He already knows, because it was maybe there was a feud between their families. We don't have any what it was, but these shepherds, it appears on a regular basis, would give them trouble. And so they did on this occasion, but They were fortunate on this day because it says the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and saved them and watered their flock, which was unheard of in that area. For men to even be involved in what they viewed to be menial kind of work for a woman, that hardly ever happened. But now Moses is a little bit different because he didn't grow up in Midian or even in that kind of environment in the East. In Egypt, they treated the women a lot better. I don't know how well they treated the women, but we do know that women were able to rise to pretty good positions and high positions in the Egyptian empire, kingdom, or whatever. And so it was, you know, they treated them with a little more respect. To Moses, to see these shepherds doing this to women would immediately be an affront to him. And remember, he just had the character, as I said last week. One of the characteristics we find in Moses is it seemed like he had a knack for standing up for the oppressed. He did not like that. He did not like to see people being abused by others who were stronger than they were. Is that a good quality to have? Yeah, Moses was a good guy. He didn't want to see people. That's why he ended up attacking that Egyptian and killing him. In that case, it was a slave being abused by his master, taskmaster probably. But in this case, it's women being abused by these men who were bullying them. But he acted immediately when he saw that. Moses stood up and saved them. How many were there? We don't know, but you know, probably a handful of them at least. Moses was kind of tough, wasn't he? He had learned. Remember, we said last week there were some reports that he even fought in small battles for Egypt because he was trained like that. Militarily, even he was trained. So he could take care of himself, and he saw these men abusing these women, and he immediately did something about it. But he has learned something. He didn't kill them, did he? he just saved the women. So maybe that's a little bit of growth right there. So yeah, go ahead. Okay, yeah. That was an all of these individuals that we study in the Bible had things to work on. And we see Moses on a few occasions losing his temper. And some of it was righteous indignation. What did Moses do when he came down from the mountain and heard the people playing and dancing and all of that? And he just threw those tablets down, didn't he, in anger. So we see that when he hit the rock. You know, sometimes his temper got the best of him. And so it seems like that was an ongoing thing that he had to do. But so far as I know, he never again murdered anybody. He had some growth there. But he comes to their rescue. And then it says, and when they came home to their father, Reuel, he said, "How is it that you have come home so soon today?" Like, probably this whole chore would usually take a little bit longer, maybe even a lot longer, because they were always being harassed. You know, it appears as if these shepherds would wait for them to fill up the troughs and then, you know, shoo their flock away and let their own flock come in and take it. So it doesn't mean that the women couldn't get water, but then they'd have to wait for them to finish and do the whole thing again and fill the troughs again and then... You know, that would take a lot of time. But on this occasion, they get home pretty quickly because Moses came to their rescue. So their father's wondering, "Why are you home already?" And they explained to him. They said, "An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds." And you notice, is Moses an Egyptian? No, but yeah. And it kind of is, but he's not. In heart, we know physically he's not. He's a Hebrew. And his heart now is with the Hebrews. But he looks like an Egyptian. No doubt he had, you remember, he just fled. So he was a prince. He had the garb of an important Egyptian. That may have contributed to why he was able to drive those others away. You know, he had the look of that, but he spoke Egyptian. He had been brought up as an Egyptian. And so these women, they just think we've been delivered by an Egyptian. Well, the father wants to know, well, where is he? He said to his daughters, then where is he? Why have you left the man? You mean he did all of this for you and you just left him? And, you know, again, that was a huge mistake on their part. We've talked over the years many times about that part of the world, how hospitable everybody is. And they are. That's just the way it is. But they weren't very hospitable with regard to Moses, were they? They just left him. So their father calls them on that. Why have you left him? Call him that he may eat bread. And Moses was content to dwell with the man. And he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah. And she gave birth to a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, I have been a sojourner in a foreign land. Now, you can see as we go through this narrative, it seems like they just jump a lot of years very quickly, don't they? You know, Moses rescued their daughters. He comes home, and he eats with them, and the dad likes him and gives him support to marry her. But in reality, years have passed. We know later on he is with the flock of Jethro. And so, you know, doing that shepherding, he becomes a shepherd. And so it's probably a little bit like Jacob and Laban situation. I don't know to what extent, but he probably became a servant of Jethro. And you can tell in later language, like when he's about to go back to his people, he actually asks permission to do that. And so it may have been that kind of a relationship there. But anyway, he settles down there and marries and has a child there. And so far as Moses goes, he had a great aspirations what he was going to do with his people. But once he killed that Egyptian, that went away, and he was forced to flee. Now he's in a foreign land. He doesn't know but that this is his life. And he now has spent, according to Stephen in Acts 7 again, he has now spent another 40 years in Midian. So he's basically made, that's his life now. He's a shepherd. Do you think he would have thought, you just don't ever know what direction your life is going to go, do you? When he was being trained and groomed in Egypt and all of that education, think he would have ever thought to himself, I know what I'm going to do when I grow up. I'm going to be a shepherd. Not that there's anything wrong with being a shepherd. I'm not saying that. But when you're the son of Pharaoh's daughter, that's not how you think. Until he had that change of heart and decided that he wasn't going to be that, but he still had no idea that he would become a shepherd. Remember, growing up in Egypt, even though he had contact with his people, and as I said last week, I think, or maybe the week before that, that it's possible that Jochebed had some contact with him, but still, he was being raised as an Egyptian. And what do we know about the Egyptians from the story of Joseph? How do they view shepherds? Not very good. Not very good. And so a lot of that would have been fed into the mind of Moses because he was being raised an Egyptian. And yet now all of a sudden he's a shepherd living a very simple life in Midian in the Arabian desert. So there you have. You just don't know what life is going to bring. All right. Any questions so far? About that, any of that. Yes, Barbara. No, it doesn't. Well, not that I know. I don't think so. No, I don't know how, what else you could call it. I mean, no matter how you look at it, he raised up, I mean, that just is what it is. I mean, can we conclude that the Egyptian deserved to die because he, even if he was beating up the Hebrew? I mean, and we don't know to what extent what he was doing to the Hebrew. But, you know, I mean, that's Genesis chapter 6 at verse 9. Man, all men are created in the image of God, including the Egyptians. And if a man sheds blood, then what should happen to him? Blood shall be shed. I mean, God, much more than man, God values life. And so, no matter what the circumstances are, unless, now, you know, I'm not saying we know what, how God feels about self-defense, and those kind of things were even worked into the law of Moses. You know, that sort of thing. And, of course, you know, depending, I don't know what everyone's views here are in this auditorium, but we know that God ordered the killing of individuals in war, and that sort of thing. But just to up on your own as an individual to kill someone is what it is. I don't know if it's ever specifically, I'm sure it's not specifically referred to as murder, but when you kill somebody, like if I killed one of you for no reason, nobody may not ever say it's murder, but what would you call it? Or what would your family call it? It is what it is. You can't just kill people, even if you're Moses, or even if you're good, you know, even if you're trying to do what's right. I have no doubt Moses had good intentions in what he was doing, but his temper got the best of him. Yeah, Seth. Yes, yes, most likely. Over the years, we have concluded that there's some doubt about that. It could be that. Yes, yes, and Jethro is probably just another name for him, and that was popular to do in ancient times. But there's some doubt about that, because there's a couple of passages that just, and it's too deep to get into here tonight, but it confuses us about these two individuals. I'm trying to think of the name of Jethro. He's called Hobab, I think, or Hobab or something, in Numbers or something like that. And is it in Judges? And that, I believe it's stated that that's Moses' father-in-law, who is the son of Reuel. Now, uh-oh, what in the world? And I had no idea. It just, there's a couple of those passages that lead some to believe that Reuel was actually Zipporah's father, but I guess I'm trying to figure out how they do it. Maybe it's said that Reuel was, well, he would be the grandfather, wouldn't he? And Jethro would be the brother. It's confusing. And it's hard. I think the best explanation is simply that it is the same man, and he just had two different names. And I just can't figure out. Yeah, go ahead, Janice. I'm sorry. Right, right. So that, yes, but yeah, you had to bring this up, didn't you? Just joking. It's interesting to look into, really, but because in the Hebrew, the way I understand it, the things like father-in-law and brother-in-law would be very closely connected. I think I even read the Hebrew words are about the same. It's one of those things that you use the same words to refer to all those relationships, those close family relationships. So it's just, but over the years, the conservative position is that Jethro and Reuel were the same person, both Moses' father-in-law, and that they just had two different names. That even Jethro may have been, the word Jethro means His Excellency, and that may have been the name that just showed the high status he had as a priest. So anyway, you know, not that big a deal, because Jethro doesn't play a huge part. He's a good man. We know that. And everything that's said about him is good, but there's not a whole lot said about him. So if we're wrong about, you know, exactly who he is, it's not that big a deal. But there is some speculation about that. All right. Anybody else? All right. Let's wrap this up, chapter 2. And at verse 23 says, during those many days, the king of Egypt died. So you can see how all this fits together according to God's plan and God's timetable, which, by the way, you know, this is another passage. I think we saw this with Joseph a lot, but this is another passage that teaches us God just works on his own timetable. Like, we can't rush God. It is, again, another 4 decades with Moses being in Midian before he actually becomes the deliverer that he was meant to be and God planned for him to be, and that he thought he was going to be 40 years earlier. Only problem with Moses is he was acting outside the will of God, because it wasn't time for him to be in that position of a deliverer. God would work all that out on his terms. But it's 40 years later when it finally starts to really get going here. So, during all that time, then at that time, it says that the king of Egypt died, and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. Why then? Why did they groan then? They have been afflicted for 400 years, and it could have been that with the dying of Pharaoh, that they had some anticipation that the next king that would come along would do a little better, would treat them a little better. And, you know, that's always a hope. But a lot of times in these kind of situations, that's a hope that isn't ever really come to fruition, because, you know, the next king comes along and sometimes it's even worse. And so whatever the reason, Pharaoh dies, another king takes his place, and now they cry to be rescued from from slavery. They cried out for help, rather. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. And so it's time. It's time for God to bring his people out from Egypt. And again, all of this is according to his timetable. He said it would be 430 years, and that's what it's going to end up being. Now, we're not there yet, of course, but there's going to be there. But what's interesting is, so think about where we are before that next bell rang. So in Exodus 1 and 2, we've covered 400 years. And in Exodus 3, to the end of the book, we're going to cover 1 year. So it slows down quite a bit, doesn't it? So it's going to be a situation where this is all about now the Exodus and the deliverance of the people of God from Egypt. And that's what the rest of the book is about. All of this has been preparation for that. And before we close, now you just stop and think, Moses has been prepared. He's been prepared by the life that he is now living. He has for in some ways become a servant, from prince to a servant. He's kind of taken the opposite route of Joseph. And now he's a shepherd. And so that's been his life. And he's a family man. He got there to Midian single. Now he's married and has a child, and so that, you know, do you learn anything from marriage? Yeah, sure. He learned how to care for a child, learned how to love his wife, and all of that would play a part. And God is grooming him to be the leader of this great nation that's developing. And so even his occupation as a shepherd I mean, you know, we've had many lessons over the years on what's involved in being a shepherd and how you have to tend to the flock. And, you know, sheep aren't very smart, so you have to constantly rescue them and care for them. And they wander off. You have to bring them back to the fold. And all of that, there's leadership lessons to be learned in all of that. And why do you think elders are shepherds? There's leadership qualities in that role. And so for 40 years, God has been grooming Moses. He thought he was ready, right? You know, when he went out there and killed that Egyptian. But God has been grooming him. But now the time has come, and he's heard the cry of his people, and it's time for him to have a conversation with Moses out of the burning bush, and things will get going. So we'll get to that on next week.